everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for another It's All About Food here on September 2nd, 2014. Did you have a nice Labor Day weekend? What did you do? I labored. I always labor, but I love my work, so it's okay to just work and work because my work is what I do. Right, and gosh, I have been just praising the weather here in New York all summer, how wonderful it's been, and I think the real New York summer weather has finally arrived. It's been hot and humid, and there's nothing that will keep my hair from going up vertically. It's just all over the place with this humidity. I hope you're staying cool wherever you are. Let's bring on my first guest. I'm really looking forward to speaking with Lisa Kemmerer. She's a philosopher activist dedicated to working against oppression, whether on behalf of the environment, non-human animals, or disempowered human beings. Her books, and there are many, include In Search of Consistency, Ethics and Animals, Animals and World Religions, Sister Species, Women, Animals, and Social Justice, Call to Compassion, Reflections on Animal Advocacy, Speaking Up for Animals, an Anthology of Women's Voices, and Primate People, Saving Non-Human Primates Through Education, Advocacy, and Sanctuary. Lisa has hiked, biked, kayaked, backpacked, and traveled widely, and is currently Associate Professor of Philosophy and Religions at Montana State University, Billings. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. I'm so happy we finally made this happen.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for your patience.
Well, thank you for your time, and so let's talk about you. So my first question is, what inspired you to do the work that you do, working against oppression?
Wow, what a question. It's huge. I think that from my experience, people who tend to work for social justice have a lot of things in their own past that have made them aware of injustice.
Yeah. Some, you know, I don't like to say the ends justify the means, but often something happens that motivates us to, and I don't know your history, that motivates us to do better and to, so other people don't have to experience what we've experienced or anything like what we've experienced.
Yeah, and you know, it isn't, we don't have to say the ends justify the means because it wasn't intentional. These are things that happened in our past that we had no say over. And the question becomes, what will we do with them now, to bring a better world?
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's part of how we manage our past, realizing that we weren't responsible for some of the things that happened. And now that we are responsible, we can make things better.
Exactly so. And, you know, you say that. Just yesterday I was talking to someone about ends and means in organizations and how some of them do use the idea that the ends can justify the means and will even with the idea of infighting in among groups trying to bring change. This is one of the things that brings a tremendous amount of fighting is those who think that the ends do justify the means and those who absolutely will not compromise their principles in trying to reach the ends.
Oh, well, that just jumps into one of the things we wanted to talk about today, which is the infighting within a certain organization or a certain community of somewhat like-minded people, but we disagree on certain things. And something I've been bringing up a lot on this program, and some of my listeners have been asking me, you know, what do I think? And it's a difficult conversation, but for those of us that are vegan, although that's not necessarily part of it, but I think it's an important part. For those of us that are against the exploitation primarily of animals, and we also realize a connection with people and the environment, the way to make change is not the same for all of us. And some believe that small steps will get us to the ultimate end, and some believe we just absolutely must be black and white and believe that everything that we preach has to be exactly what we believe in, and we cannot promote small steps on the way.
Right. Yeah. And I tend to be very open to all. I think that the dialogue is healthy. I think that the diversity is healthy. So I think that the whole picture is a wonderful thing, and I think if we could just approach each other as common cause rather than common enemies, we can really benefit from that dialogue. Rather than fighting with each other, we can spend our energy trying to bring change in the world. And yet we can still learn from one another by talking about different approaches and the pros and cons of different approaches. And there are pros and cons, and there are sacrifices that some make that others aren't willing to make. And just putting those on the table, understanding them, I think that's very important.
I'm with you there. I know what I can do personally, and I know what I can promote personally. But if someone wants to do it a little differently, I don't want to condemn them. I don't think that's productive. And I'm not a promoter of Facebook. I use it. It's constantly changing, and I don't know that it's going in the right direction, but there's so much negativity up there, and it just upsets me when I see people that I believe want the ultimate, have the same goal in the end, are really putting each other down, getting there.
Yes, and spending a lot of time doing it.
And
that
spending
time
a
to
lot
be
of
spent.
Time.
You could really do things with that time. I could write entire books with the time I see people wasting.
Yes,
arguing
it looks like
with
that's what
other.
You're doing, yeah.
Well, I don't go on Facebook. I don't engage in those kind of lengthy, time-consuming discussions. I know that they're out there, but that isn't where I want my energy to go.
Yeah, I like Facebook for posting family pictures for my family and seeing their pictures. It's just a fun place to unwind, to see some cute pictures, and I like posting recipes, friendly, happy things for people who, you know, want to unwind and see some nice things like that. But the negativity, it's not the place for it. I don't think any place is the place for it. But
it's a really good place to where people can find you. And I'm very fortunate. I have a wonderful student who's graduated and gone on to do wonderful things in social justice named Morgan Was Hanley and now Burnett, who actually keeps me a page on Facebook. So I can be found there.
Exactly.
But I don't have to deal with it. So I feel very fortunate about that.
Yes, it's a good place to be found. I think I might have found you there, actually. I'm not
there
sure where
it.
I found you, but I know.
Thanks, Morgan. Yes.
So dialogue is important. And so how do we do that? How, when someone is angry, and is there a way to dialogue so that anger is dissipated, especially when we're on the same path?
I'm comparatively old in this movement now, and one thing I've learned is save your energy. There are some people worth talking to and some that you should give a pass. Everybody is not worth talking to. Now, of course, when I was younger, everybody was worth talking to, and you have the energy, and to some extent, you have more time.
Right.
So now I know that if someone is not interested in the dialogue, if you can see that they have a very set way of being or they don't invite conversation, they have to invite me into a conversation, and then I will have the conversation. But if they're just taking a stand, I will just acknowledge their stand.
Yes, and then
I sometimes won't even bother to say my own, because what is the point if they're not interested?
Very good, very good. All right, so you let me know that you're working. You've got a bunch of books coming out.
I do, two anthologies and one that I've written called Eating Earth that looks at one of the social justice issues and the environmental aspects of our dietary choice.
Okay, we've talked a bit about that on this program. Do you want to touch on, did you make some discoveries in this book? Or
what I like best about this book?
Yeah.
I don't know, discovery is the combination of things that are in it. It is not just on factory farming and the environment, which there is some coverage on. There is a whole chapter on that, and it goes in depth and basically points out very clearly our diet is the number one contributor to environmental degradation on, you know, at least five different areas, everything from the global climate change to deforestation to the water depletion to soil erosion, all of those. It's the number one contributor. But the book also has a whole chapter on fish, on fishing in seas and water, so another aspect of our dietary choice. And finally, hunting. It really looks closely at, so some people will quickly turn to fish or to hunting to try to say, oh, this is the better choice. And the book shows clearly that neither of those are better choices. The better choice is to quit eating animals. That is the only reasonable choice if you actually care about the environment.
That's good. Well, I look forward to reading that. And when does that come out?
October.
Okay, well, I didn't even, or maybe I knew it when I first reached out to you.
I didn't know it. That's why you didn't know it. It's not. I don't think I've put it out anywhere yet. It's not even on my current resume.
Does it have a title?
Yes, Eating Earth.
Eating Earth.
After the colon, I think it's Dietary Choice and Planetary Health or something really like that.
Great. Well, all the best. Now, how do you write three books at a time?
Yeah, well, it's an excellent choice because I'm also teaching, you know, a full-time job. So I think it happens that way. Well, it certainly happens that way unintentionally. I'll start something and then, well, for instance, the other two are anthologies. So while I'm waiting for the essays to come in, I can't seem to contain myself, and I'll start something else, and the essays will pile in, and then I'll send those essays back, and I'll start something else. So they kind of slowly crawl along together. And one of them I started at least 6 years ago, maybe seven. It just takes a long time to put them together. So I don't know. I need different things to work on so I don't go nuts, and sometimes there's a lull in the activity, and I don't seem to have a lot of sense about doing something other than my work during those lulls.
Well, I think that this is where the small steps really make a difference in getting to your goal. There are some big issues where I'd like to see big, giant steps immediately, like end factory farming, done. In terms of accomplishing things in our life, small steps, working on everything in small doses is the way to ultimately reach our goals.
And, you know, one thing, when you say the conversation, talking to people and bringing change and dealing with others in the movement, that's one of the things that I always turn back to. One of my good friends who works for HSUS, Alex Burry, brought it up to me initially. She said, these people who say there's only one way and it's the right way, what I want to ask is, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, maybe there is only one way and only one right way. Good. What are you doing to get us there? So just attacking others in the movement isn't it. So there's so many different little ways and little steps, but I think it is true that there's a significant number, and I could name a few but will not, who simply spend their time attacking the work of others and, frankly, don't seem to be doing anything to actually change the ones who are consuming animals and exploiting them in other ways.
That's a great question to ask anyone, and I use that from time to time on a lot of different issues, not just with animal-related issues, because there's so much violence going on in the world today. And
absolutely.
What a lot of people do, I get these emails that were forwarded and forwarded and forwarded and forwarded and forwarded.
Yes.
And then I don't even have time to read them, but, you know, occasionally when I glance at one, they're just filled with so much vile hatred. And, you know, and I think, okay, what are you doing about it? Sending an email? That's not doing anything.
Yes. And there's one, I ask it with racism, with sexism, with homophobia, with ageism, with ableism, all of those are the same thing. And it's pretty sketchy what people actually, when it actually comes to engaging with these, what they're willing to give up, what they're willing to admit, it shrinks considerably.
What they're willing to give up, exactly.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
Nothing.
And that's what it comes down to if you really care about social justice. You have to give up your privileges.
Yes, not all of them, just, you know, a little bit here and there.
That's right. And the ones you give up, you should never have had, and you shouldn't want them. So at the end of the day, it doesn't feel like a sacrifice. It just feels like what's right.
Gosh, it should feel good, I think.
Yes, that's right. Like changing our diets.
Now, you're going to the conference in Luxembourg next week, and I've read a little bit about that. I actually I was trying to bring a little bit of that conference here by interviewing a number of different people who are going to that conference. I had Friedrich Mühlen on the show and Frederica Schmitz.
Wonderful.
And so have you been to their conferences over there before?
Yes.
And what are they like?
They're really fun. First of all, it's just wonderful to go to Europe where you actually, I mean, our country is so gigantic. And
I love
kind
Europe.
Of, yes, it's nice to have different languages and just some different history, some very different history. So it's fun to go for that. But the conferences are wonderful, and there's a different flavor to them. And it's been a few years since I went to this particular one, but it had a very liberationist feel, which I really liked. And I do a lot of academic conferences, and they tend to be less liberationist, so I find that very refreshing.
Okay, I got that. Now, I haven't been in Europe for 5 years. I can't believe it's that long that I haven't been there. And I used to live in France for 4 years when I never met another vegetarian in the early 90s. And it's so exciting now that they're out of the closet.
Yes. Well, and it's taken off, too. It
yes.
is totally taken off, and not just vegetarian, but vegan. It's out there. It's happening.
Yeah. But I got the impression it was more serious. And
oh.
and maybe
wow.
that's changed, too.
What an interesting thought. Well, you know, there are flavors to countries, and the Brits have one of my favorite senses of humor anywhere on the planet. So, you know, having said that, okay, they may be serious in some ways, but they have a great sense of humor. Now, France, well, okay, maybe they're more serious, but the dogs can go right into the restaurant. So, you know, really, who's a little more lighthearted there? The dogs
mm-hmm.
are everywhere and right in the restaurants. They can go into grocery stores. They can go anywhere.
Right.
So, I don't know. It depends on what you mean, I guess.
Right. Well, I remember going to one of the early veggie pride parades in Paris, and we have one here in New York City. And it's a very
right.
different feeling here in New York. It's more
yes.
Just fun and festive.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
and I don't know if it's changed over there in Europe, but it was all of the dark issues. And it is dark. I mean, it's just horrible what humans
yeah.
will do, not only to
they
humans, but to animals.
It's
and
true.
They wanted to bring all of that out.
And they tend to wear dark clothes there and be much more.
They do.
That's the word I would
New
use.
York,
much more
we wear
formal.
A lot of dark clothes here.
Yeah, but we're not very formal. We're a younger nation that's a little bit
yeah.
savage in our ways, and you could feel that difference when you're there. There's a formality to life that we lack.
Well, I just feel it's almost like a load has been lifted, knowing that this dialogue is going on in Europe and it's going on
yeah.
all over the world, where
yeah.
it didn't feel like it was before.
Yeah.
Just gives me a lot of inspiration.
You know what else
yeah.
I love about it? It isn't just a dialogue anymore about animal rights. It truly is. I'm speaking on the juncture with sexism, with
mm-hmm.
environment, and then in a conference in Germany at the end of my trip there, it's on religions. So three different intersections, and the one in Bonn, Germany, is completely on religion and animals. So we just
oh.
our scope is so much bigger in what we're looking at. We have some actual nuance now that is. Growing and strong.
Well, you work against oppression, and it's all, to me, it's all the same. And when people get to that point where they see exploitation, just generic exploitation, just how we just take advantage of whomever, whatever we can, without any thought about it, when you see that, it makes it I think a lot easier to make change in your own life, and unfortunately people need to go step by step. They only see it in one area before they see it in another area, but I think now we're starting to connect more dots.
Yeah, I think we are too, and I think as a Caucasian I need to have sensitivity when I think about these subjects. So I think what would say a black female lesbian say about that? What is her mm-hmm. take on how these fit together, and then looking at the animals themselves, if they were speaking our language to us, what they would say about oppression where they are, you know, systematically killed. So, okay, as a female, I know I meet up with discrimination, but to compare that to what happens to a pig or, say, a black feminist lesbian, it's just a really different picture of what the experiences are. And I think just trying to be aware of that. And I don't know how much we can understand the experiences of others, but we can certainly listen and try to be sensitive to those differences.
One of the things that's challenging is language. And, you know, I've learned the hard way, putting my foot in my mouth from time to time over the decades
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh, that was not the right thing to say. But
oh, heavens.
You know, sometimes
yeah.
you don't know until you say it and see what the reaction
yeah.
is, and then the light goes on. And there's so much that's in our language that is just normal. I mean, normal is not a good word, but...
I hear you, though.
And
yeah.
you don't realize what damage you're doing to someone else by saying certain things that are just
yes.
so common.
Everyone does it. We all make mistakes. We cannot have full awareness of the experiences of others. And I think we need to apologize, and when we're offended, we need to accept apologies. I think that no one is completely clean, and if we're going to work together, we have to be able to accept our mistakes and be forgiving of others.
I sure would like to hear what animals think about what we do to them.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned, you know, you don't know what they think or what they would say, but I would sure like to know.
We get some pretty good guesses about a few things they'd say.
Yeah. Now, the animals and religion, can you give us some idea of what you'll be talking about or discussing? That part is really fascinating. The whole religious, I'm not a religious person. And for those that are religious, I respect them as long as they're not causing pain and suffering to anyone.
Right. It's a great question you ask.
Yeah.
You know, the religion side of things is neglected, and most of the people in the movement will say they aren't religious. But what makes me sad is that they're saying that as if, therefore, that's why they don't know anything about it. And the reason I write about it is because it is one of the most effective ways to bring change. When I'm dealing with someone who is an atheist, let's say, they can, and I tell them all the horrible things that are going on, they can simply say to me, "Oh gosh, that's horrible. Get out of my way. I'm trying to buy my groceries." But when you say that to someone from any one of the major religious traditions, they cannot say that. They are, if they take their religion seriously, they are bound to what's in their texts and their core teachings and the religious exemplars. They're tied to that. And when you call them on it, it has a very different effect than it can ever have on someone who is not committed to some moral code like that they are tied to. So it's an extremely effective form of advocacy. But to use it, we have to actually know the traditions. So I would say the movement is remiss in not knowing these basic teachings and in not taking them on board so that when they meet someone, and I will almost never fail to talk to someone who's religious about these issues, because you know, I say I won't talk to people who are closed. They cannot be closed. They cannot tell me that their religion teaches cruelty or that their religion believes that causing unnecessary suffering is okay. So it's a very important field, and I encourage everyone out there, know the basics, know the fundamentals of religions that will call people to a kinder way of life.
Yeah, I like that. I was raised Jewish, and one of the things that I like to do, I love family gatherings and traditional foods, people getting together. That part of, be it religion or culture or whatever, holidays are great. And one of the things that I do is veganize all the recipes. And this year I did a vegan gefilte fish, and I can't wait for the Passover holiday to come around again.
For you. Food advocacy.
I haven't seen one of those before, except I make it out of almonds, and almonds are not very politically correct these days because they're coming from drought lands in California, and almonds are getting a rap, but
that's okay. Walnuts have the omega-3s that we need anyway, so
I'm not down on all almonds. It's just I'm reading so many blog posts about people that are upset about almonds, and what do they want us to do, drink milk, cow's milk?
Yeah. Isn't it so true that it is hard, you cannot please everyone, but by golly, that is no excuse not to try and to make the changes you really need to make against the most horrendous things we're doing.
So back to religion, and that, so the tactic is to speak to religious people and bring up the parts of their religion that have to do with compassion.
Yep, and that's all that I do in animals and world religion. It goes through each religion and explores the animal-friendly teachings. And this isn't to say that I'm looking at some fringe element. These are core teachings. These are foundational teachings. These are teachings that no one in the tradition can ignore. And it also shows, at the end of each chapter, I give contemporary activists working in those traditions to bring change for animals because they know it's part of their tradition.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have the Jewish Vegetarians of North America, and we have the Christian Vegetarian Association. Mm-hmm. Do you know of any Muslim vegetarian society?
Yes, there is.
Oh, I've been looking.
Islamic Concern is, I think, what it's called. And, you know, many of the organizations, I think both PETA and HSUS, now have a link where you can click and find out about religious organizations working with animals, and Islam is one of the ones, I think, on both sites. But I also mention them in the book Animals and World Religion, so I'm not real sure, but I can certainly look it up if somebody gets a hold of me and asks. Or you can also go on the web and find these things, but I think it's Islamic Concern.
Concern. Okay. I haven't looked. I looked a few years ago and didn't find anything, so I think it's time to look again.
Yeah, and it is changing. It's a growing and changing field.
Yeah, which is very exciting. We're moving forward.
It's encouraging. And, you know, you've been in this long enough to know just how discouraging it could be.
Yeah. Yes, I do. So you're in Montana.
Oh, yeah. Talk about discouraging.
And there is a vegan restaurant, isn't there? If not more than one.
Well, there's certainly not one where I live in Billings, Montana, and it's the biggest city.
There isn't one.
There's not even a vegetarian restaurant.
Oh.
No,
okay.
No, this is Billings, Montana. Now, it's possible that Missoula, I doubt
it was
very
Missoula.
Much.
Missoula, yeah. How
yeah,
far
Yeah, they
away
might have
that?
A vegetarian one. 5 hours drive.
Oh,
six.
Yeah, it's a big state.
No way. Big state. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of difference between Billings and, yeah.
Okay, so it's not very veg-friendly there.
Well, you know, it's changing. It is definitely changing. I've now been here more than a decade, and I have 35 students per class. I probably have every semester about 100, 120 students, and there is no class where I don't cover all of these facets of animal exploitation. And it's been long enough. There's change. I can see it when I go grocery shopping. There's a new grocery store downtown, and it actually has all of the vegan products. It's so exciting. It just
yeah.
opened. So
wow.
more and more I'm seeing that there's a sensitivity to the fact that there is a market for these things here in Billings, Montana.
That's so good. Now, do your students know what they're getting when they sign up for your classes?
I'm sure some of them do.
Do you surprise some of them with the information that you teach?
Of course I do, and especially early on before I had a reputation. I had one guy come in and sit down and say, I can't wait to get to the animal part. He could not wait. He was one of the exploiters. By the time I got to the animal part, he knew he had nothing to say because I built a platform in which he could not, he knew there was no wiggle room.
Did he think he was going to have a debate with you?
Yeah, and he thought he was going to show me how wrong I was, and he just
wow.
lost his oomph as time went on.
This is the power of education. And we need it everywhere.
And it's so exciting. You know, the people know the degrees. It's actually animal studies programs. It's so exciting.
Say that again.
There is now the education, yes. Just as activists, we all need it. But it's also true that there's now degrees in animal studies, and there's courses in animal
degrees.
Studies.
Right.
Yeah, so we'll have more and more teachers out there who know this stuff, and their students aren't going to slip through without hearing it.
Yeah, and it's going to be good for animals, but it's going to be good for the environment. It's going to be good for people.
Yeah.
I continually think, you know, you mentioned people spending energy, too much energy on Facebook, and I think mm-hmm. we are capable of so much greatness, and we are
yes.
wasting our time.
And I swear our culture encourages us or wants us to
waste our time.
Yes, we're not causing trouble when we're playing on Facebook.
We could be accomplishing things that aren't even imaginable because we haven't mm-hmm. gotten to that place, but we could. I mean, just thinking of what we've done in the last 50 years is amazing, and the next 10 mm-hmm. are going to be incredible if
I really want to tell young people, put your gadgets down. Be in the real world. Talk to people who are present. And I know that the Internet gives us lots of ability to have information and to connect with others far away. And some of my friends say, you know, it would be easier for you to be in Billings if you would connect with other vegans all around the world. And I know it's true, but I'm here connecting with the people in Billings, and it's how I bring change. And, yes, sometimes it's depressing and lonely, and I sometimes do need to and will connect with people outside and with my vegan friends elsewhere. But I just think we spend much too much time on just not dealing with real people in our real space, having our own real lives. And I don't think that's helpful to our movement.
I agree, and hopefully it's going to change. But, Lisa, thank you for spending this half hour with me. I really enjoyed it, and I hope to get to meet you sometime. And I'm looking forward to Eating Earth. That's going to be a great book. I know it.
Thank you, and thank you for all the good that you do, and wonderful to talk with you.
Okay, and say guten Tag to everyone in Luxembourg when you get there.
Shall do.
Okay.
Will do. Take care.
Thank you. All right,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was great. That was Lisa Kimmerer. And we're going to take a little break now and be back with the Esselstyns, Dr. Esselstyn, Anne Esselstyn, and their daughter Jane, talking about the Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease cookbook. Stay with me.